Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This year's Prisoners' Justice Day episode of Groundwire was produced on traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee Territory, CFRC, in Kingston, Ontario. We're your hosts, Jasmine
and Portia Chapman. In this year's Prisoners' Justice Day episode of Groundwire, a premiere on the humanitarian crisis in Canadian prisons, and highlights from Prisoners' Justice Day broadcasts on Canada's community radio stations.
I did everything I possibly could to develop a trust factor with the inmates.
We're deterring people, but I'm not too sure if that really holds much water. Where deterrence really comes in and where change behavior really comes in is through education.
The effects of solitary confinement aren't really hidden, but no change has really been made.
But first, here are the headlines.
The Prisoner Correspondence Project has launched a petition to challenge the Canadian Correctional Services to implement policy changes to support the human rights of trans prisoners. CKUT Prison Radio brings us the headline from Montreal.
Organizers of a petition demanding that Correctional Services Canada implement major policy changes for trans people in prison are asking that people call in today to keep up the pressure on those officials responsible for stalling on this policy change. The list of demands, created by a group of trans prisoners in collaboration with the Prisoner Correspondence Project, is as follows. 1. Always prioritize alternatives to incarceration. 2. Give all trans prisoners the right to choose their gendered housing in prison. 3. End involuntary segregation. 4. Provide access to clothing and personal items regardless of gender. 5. Ensure immediate and continuous access to qualified health professionals. 6. Allow prisoners to choose which guards perform searches. 7. Arrange to offer private shower and bathroom access. 8. Ease access for outside groups and visitors. 9. Raise wages and living allowances. Calling in today is one way you can take concrete action to show solidarity with folks inside for Prisoner Justice Day. You can call the following individuals. Minister of Public Safety Ralph Goodale at 306-585-2202. If you're part of the constituency for Ralph Goodale. And Ralph Goodale's number at Parliament is 613-947-1153. You can also call Commissioner Don Head at 613-995-5781. Finally, you can call Assistant Commissioner Larry Motiek at 613-996-2180. To read the full statement, including the list of demands, you can visit prisonercorrespondenceproject.com.
For CFRC's Prisoners' Justice Day tribute, Albert Dumont talked about how counseling helps those who are within the walls of the prison system.
I did everything I possibly could to develop a trust factor with the inmates, and also to let them know that I was a human rights activist and that I wasn't going to allow any human rights violations occur that I witnessed, and also that I would, that I could be counted on to help them out with the best counsel possible. I told them that when I counseled with them, that I would be doing so with the same passion and empathy that I would for my own blood relatives, and they could count on that, but also that I made them aware right at the beginning too that I was never going to forget that there was victims, that their criminal actions had victims, and that I would never forget that somebody had suffered either. You know, it wasn't just going to be a one-sided thing where I was going to be going all out to defend their rights and care, but whether they were suffering emotionally and psychologically, spiritually. I just was concerned too for anybody that's a victim of crime.
This story was brought to you by CFRC's Jasmine Chapman.
Red Lake, a community of less than 5,000 at the end of the road in northwestern Ontario, celebrated its first Pride organized by the Indian Friendship Center. The opening ceremonies began with a prayer by Two-Spirit Elder Manay Checkerby, followed by a few words by Mayor Phil Vinay and guest Teddy Surrett.
Words can't really express how, when I look out and see everyone here today, it's just truly amazing. I want to welcome everyone here. Before I do that, I want to acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of Treaty 3, in particular the Lac Seul First Nation. And I'd like to further acknowledge our historical relationship with our First Nations communities north of us. They are our precious neighbors as well. Even to that end, I wanted to acknowledge a special shared futures agreement we have with Pikangikum First Nations. And if we can just sit back for one moment and share the grief and pain that the people of Pikangikum are going through right now. They need our help, and we want to help them. Give them a twirl.
Good morning, Red Lake. Awesome, on here. Ojawanong Kwen Adishna Kaz, Maigan Nododam, Obajwan Nadonjaba. My spirit name is Yellow Star Woman. For tax purposes, my name is Theodore Surrett. Theodore meaning gift from God. So either I apologize or you're welcome. I just want to say thank you so much, and Chimigwech, for coming out here. Chimigwech, for inviting me here to your home and celebrating Red Lake's first pride. You should be proud. This is history in the making. You are making history being here. Your young children will be able to tell their young children about the first time that they marched here in Red Lake Pride and showed solidarity and showing that love is love and that difference should not matter. Now we see prides happening all over the place, not just in Montreal or Toronto or Vancouver, but you're seeing them happen in Elliott Lake and Serpent River and Sault Ste. Marie and Sudbury and Timmins and now Red Lake, Ontario. All of you, yes, all of you should be very proud.
Thank you to Kathy Forbes and to J.L. Chung of CILU for that headline.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this. Just heard Long Black Ladders by Bull North from the album Low Harmony. Welcome back to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up. Available online at www.groundwirenews.ca and airing on your community radio station.
And now it's time for our feature stories.
On August 6th, Stephanie Doucette, host of People of Interest on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Treaty 1 Contested Territory, spoke with Lorraine Chun and Marcia McLeod, co-authors of the article, Everything You Were Never Taught About Canada's Prison Systems, on the website intersectionalanalyst.com. Their article uses vast amounts of research to make the current Canadian penal systems more visible and accessible with the help of infographics and other data visualization.
Winnipeg last year, Winnipeg Remand Center killed 5 people. And we can look through the article to find a lot of different infographics and statistics that are sort of relevant to like premature death at the hands of correctional services, whether like federal or provincial. So like, I guess last year we talked with Bob Gaucher, who was involved in a lot of prison justice work in the 70s. And so we talked a little bit about the history of Prisoner Justice Day, which had to do with solitary confinement and had to do with suicides in solitary. But things have evolved since then, and you've looked sort of at a bit of those trends. So can you talk about that and like all the different pieces that that goes with? I mean, it's kind of hard to separate any of them, but
absolutely. I mean, Prisoner's Justice Day, as I understand it, obviously from quite a number of years in the future from its inception in 1976. But, you know, just reading what prisoners wrote about why that day was, they chose to honor two individuals who had died in solitary confinement in the Millhaven Institution, one in 1975 and one in 1976. And they wrote, quote, "We protest against the continuous inhumane use of solitary confinement and repeated whitewashing by spineless individuals in the government who are forever having inquiries into the use of solitary and its effects on a person's mental and physical state, and then hide the real facts of use from its people, or hide the real facts of its use from the people." And so now I think the effects of solitary confinement aren't really hidden, but no change has really been made. I think that it's critical, as you mentioned, just to notice that, you know, in 1976, a key demand of prisoners was to address sort of indefinite solitary confinement. And obviously that is still a key demand of prisoners today. I think that just the issue has kind of transformed and in some ways become a little bit more nebulous and a little bit harder to pin down because I think the government tries to give some inclinations that, you know, they're working on this issue and they're producing reports and they're doing inquiries and inquests. But at the end of the day, the situation is still, that I would argue, quite similar, despite the fact that the Canadian government has announced this so-called 15-day cap on solitary confinement, which isn't really binding at all. It's just that there's supposed to be shorter times for when someone has to start investigating into that indefinite confinement. But
I just wanted to add that there's also that 18-month transition period too, where for that time the cap will be set at 21 days, so it's not even going to immediately be put in place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think also just to notice that this is something that recently read about in the Howard Sapir's report. This is Ontario specific on solitary confinement. They call it segregation, as they do across Canada, but solitary confinement, report on solitary confinement that was released in May. And a key issue that they bring up is that in Ontario, the definition of segregation is, quote, "an area designated for the placement of inmates who are to be housed separate from the population." So it's kind of like saying, well, segregation is a place where people are segregated, but it means nothing, right? And every institution gets to set their own segregation area. So they get to decide what is and is not considered segregation. There's really no conditions around it. But the issue that comes up is at Toronto South Detention Center in Toronto, they have units called behavioral management units where they're not labeled segregation, but prisoners are only allowed at their cells for a maximum of 1.5 hours a day. So leaving people confined for the other 22 and a half, which absolutely falls under international definitions of solitary confinement. But it's not actually counted as such in the data. So actually their data says, oh, well, we have less and less people in solitary confinement based on our definition of what that is.
Right.
And so it kind of, again, comes back to how even the data that we have can really obscure what's actually going on.
That was Lorraine Chun, and Marshall McLeod, authors of the article Everything You Were Never Taught About Canada's Prison Systems, speaking with CKUW's Stephanie Doucette in Winnipeg, Treaty 1 contested territory.
On Thursday, August 10th, CFRC's Jasmine Chapman spoke with BC's Dr. John Charlton, a registered clinical counselor, academic researcher, and publisher, to talk about Prisoners' Justice Day, the prison system, and rehabilitation.
So today is Prisoners' Justice Day, and it's kind of defined as being the day to remember those who have died in prison, to kind of bring awareness to that. Now, why do you think it was important to make sure that the public knows about these deaths and that it is unjust from, like, the stories that you have heard?
Well, it's not just the deaths. I mean, that's at the one extreme end of things. I think society, and it's not just prisons either, it's anything that is state-run. We, as concerned citizens, need to be concerned with transparency so that abuses can't not only happen, but perpetuate. And it's not just the prison systems where that happens. I mean, there's an old saying that the best disinfectant is sunlight. So if we can look and take notice, we can correct things when they go wrong.
So justice is defined as being the quality of being just, being righteous, and moral rightness. But as a justice activist, what does justice mean to you?
In this particular sense, I would say that my understanding of justice would be correction through education. It's not so much vengeance. It's not so much making people pay in terms of that. That scenario, because that's backward looking. I mean, there's a lot of argument that can be made about, we're deterring people, but I'm not too sure if that really holds much water. Where deterrence really comes in and where change behavior really comes in is through education.
I did an interview with some people from Kingston about prison farms. Do you think that that may have actually been helpful with people trying to get jobs? And after that happened, did the prisoners trying to get jobs actually kind of fell down?
Yeah, I do, actually. If we define ourselves through the stories we tell about ourselves, but we also kind of define ourselves by the stories other people tell about us. So if you give someone something that they can be proud of, it's really beneficial. To take that away from people, animal therapy. I've heard people saying how, they looked forward to actually working with the animals or getting out in the farm. And now that's gone. So anything that kind of shines light at the end of the tunnel, it has a good chance of being shut down.
And are there any last words that you'd like to share today?
Last words. I guess I would just like to say that, concerned citizens need to take notice of this more so than I think that we have been doing. And we need to look at our politicians, and we need to listen to our politicians, and we need to actually hold them to account. Again, when somebody says, we need to make criminals pay, well, okay, that's a nice little punchline or a tagline, but what do you mean by that? And then, we need to ask them, okay, but if you make the criminals pay when they get out and they've been treated terribly, and we don't allow them to get work, and we don't allow them to do this, and we put such constraints on them that, they're angry individuals. The chances of you meeting up with them as we're walking down the street, or as they're walking down the street, is a lot less than somebody else who's just going about their daily business, minding their own business, trying to get through their day, pay their rent, meeting up with certain types of people, So while taglines are fine and they sound kind of cool, what is it doing to foster a safer community? And a safer community is based on, what I was talking about earlier is positive peace, where everybody can succeed to the best of their abilities. That's, I guess, my final comment is, we need to hold those in positions of authority accountable, which is why we need transparency.
This story was brought to you by CFRC's Jasmine Chapman.
We'll be right back.
just heard Human by Andrew Franny from the album Human. Welcome back to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up. Available online at www.groundwirenews.ca and airing on your local community radio station.
Now it's time for our community radio report.
Several community radio stations across Canada participated in special broadcasts marking the Prisoners' Justice Day, including CFRU in Guelph, Ontario, CKUT in Montreal, Quebec, and CFRC in Kingston, Ontario.
First, Prison Radio, CKUT, will give some background on Prisoners' Justice Day.
Prisoner Justice Day, today, August 10th, is a day set aside to remember and bring visibility to all those who have died inside Canadian prisons. Wherever you find the shackles of oppression, you'll also find the spirit of resistance. There are a great many prisoners who were and still are involved in the struggle for prisoners' rights within the walls. Every year on August 10th, prisoners fast and refuse to work in a show of solidarity to remember those who have died inside, victims of murder, suicide, and neglect. The day is originally based on the death of Eddie Nalon, a prisoner who was being held in Millhaven Maximum Security Prison in Bath, Ontario, who bled to death in the segregation unit there on August 10th, 1974. The following year, on August 10th, prisoners in Millhaven refused to work and went on a one-day hunger strike, as well as held a memorial service. The following year, in 1976, prisoners in Millhaven once again went on a one-day hunger strike to commemorate not only Eddie Nalon, but also Robert Landers, another inmate who had died in segregation earlier that year. Thousands of prisoners across Canada also went on a one-day hunger strike on August 10th, 1976. Since 1976, Prisoner Justice Day has become an international day of solidarity with prisoners in many places, marking this day of mourning, remembrance, and resistance.
This statement from the Prison Justice Day Committee in 2001 remains relevant today. Prisoners' Justice Day is August 10th, the day prisoners have set aside as a day to fast and refuse to work in a show of solidarity to remember those who have died unnecessarily, victims of murder, suicide, and neglect. The day when organizations and individuals in the community hold demonstrations, vigils, worship services, and other events in common resistance with prisoners. The day to raise issue with the fact that a very high rate of women are in prison for protecting themselves against their abusers. This makes it obvious that the legal system does not protect women who suffer violence at the hands of their partners. It is a day to remember that there are a disproportionate number of natives, African Canadians, and other minorities and marginalized people in prisons. Prisons are the ultimate form of oppression against struggles for recognition and self-determination. August 10th is a day to raise public awareness of the demands made by prisoners to change the criminal justice system and the brutal and inhumane conditions that lead to so many prison deaths. It's a day to oppose prison violence, police violence, and violence against women and children. It's a day to publicize that, in their fight for freedom and equality, the actions of many political prisoners have been criminalized by government. As a result, there are false claims that there are no political prisoners in North American prisons. August 10th is a day to raise public awareness of the economic and social costs of a system of criminal justice which punishes for revenge. If there is ever to be social justice, it will only come about using a model of healing justice, connecting people to the crimes and helping offenders take responsibility for their actions. Prisoner Justice Day is a day to renew the struggle for HIV/AIDS education, prevention, and treatment in prison. It's a day to remind people that the criminal justice system and the psychiatric system are mutually reinforcing methods that the state uses to control human beings. There is a lot of brutality by staff committed in the name of treatment. Moreover, many deaths in the psych prisons remain uninvestigated.
Unnecessary deaths continue to happen in Canada's prison system. Over the last 5 years, 270 people have died in custody, with about two-thirds of deaths being prisoners waiting trial in remand centers. Mandy Hiscox discussed these deaths on CFRU with journalist Marcia McLeod.
For example, in 2016, five people died at the Winnipeg Remand Center. One of those was Errol Green, and he was an epileptic man who had been incarcerated on remand as a breach of probation, and the probation was related to a minor nonviolent offense. And the breach of probation was actually related to drinking alcohol, and we're not even talking like overconsumption, but just even drinking alcohol at all could be a breach of probation. And he was incarcerated on remand, and he was actually on the phone with his wife when he had a seizure, and during the course of the seizure was handcuffed by guards, thrown in his cell, And the prison took a pretty egregious amount of time to call in any medical assistance by that time. He was non-responsive. And the family has shared that Earl was denied his epilepsy medication. So as an epileptic, he would have been taking medication three times a day to prevent seizures. The prison is basically alleging that because they didn't have a doctor on staff the day he was booked, so brought into the prison, they couldn't approve his medication, so they couldn't give it to him. So he would have gone a number of days without anti-seizure medication.
An inquest into the death of Errol Green is ongoing in order to determine how similar deaths could be prevented in the future. The Barrie Examiner quoted Keith Katsuka, former prisoner and executive director of the John Howard Society of Simcoe and Muskoka, as stating, "This is an urgent life and death human rights issue. There needs to be action now. We can't wait another 43 years. That's it for this Prisoner's Justice Day edition of Groundwire, produced at CFRC in Kingston, the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee Territory. Music this week was brought to you by Andrew Franny and Bull North. Headlines this week were written by Carly Forbes, Prison Radio CKUT, and Jasmine Chapman from CFRC in Kingston, Ontario. We also thank all of our contributors, including Gunargi O'Sullivan, J.L. Chung, Gretchen King, Stephanie Doucette, Mandy Hiscox, Jasmine Chapman, and Portia Chapman. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca.